From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour can be made in a single word: benefits. Or how about another one? Turnover. How about another? Job shortages. Well, that's two words. But we're going to talk about all kinds of issues related to the current job market with a look at HR this hour. And we're going to focus on a number of these issues through the lens of some folks who are well-equipped to answer our questions. You know, everyone, not everybody, but a lot of people need or want a job. Many people looking for a job. Folks want to move up. Everyone wants to know, what are the trends in hiring and benefits? How do you get a good job? What are employers looking for right now? This applies to so many of us, and in Rochester, they just had the second annual award luncheon for the Rochester HR Executive of the Year. That was through the National Human Resources Association's local chapter, and the winner of that's in studio. He's George Heiler, the Vice President of Human Resources for Conserve, and the HR Executive of the Year in our area. Nice to have you here, George. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of that.
The people who helped make that happen are Jennifer Garrigan. She's Placement Director for AP Professionals, and she is the President-Elect of the local chapter of NHRA. Jennifer, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Jennifer Stiers here, the Director of Human Resources for the Gleason Works and a past President of the local chapter of the National Human Resources Association. Jennifer, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Well, George, I have to start with you. How did you win this award? How did you become the HR Executive of the Year?
Well, the process is a nomination process.
Oh, we don't care about the process. I want to know what makes you such a good HR executive, because, you know, everyone listening, well, not everyone, I hope not everyone, but people who are workers, who are listening, some folks may have had occasionally in the past of experience at work where you feel like, why are benefits being cut? Or what's happening here? It's nice to have people in the studio who, your employees are happy with the work you're doing, the community respects you. What's your approach to work and how are things going?
Well, it's a big part of it is a team approach. I've got a great, great team. Two of them, as a matter of fact, the executive team at Conserve and the human resource and talent acquisition and the organizational development team at Conserve is really the best I've worked with anywhere in my long career. So,
and how many employees at Conserve?
There's about 550 here in Fairport, New York, and another 200 in Cheektowaga, New York.
And you guys have been growing?
We have.
Because I'm reading here that part of the reason you win this award is because you've helped reduce the rate of turnover by 50%. What is the rate of turnover at your company?
Well, in a call center, it can be upwards of like 100%. So when I came to Conserve, I came to a really highly thought of well-managed company, and it was a fraction of most call centers at around 60%. And by working hard and developing benefits and giving people really great supervision, then we were able to reduce it to under 30%.
Under 30% at a call center.
Correct.
That's pretty that's pretty remarkable.
Thanks.
But you mentioned benefits. And I want to hit that point early on, because we've already had a number of people who saw the what was coming up in the program today. And they said, isn't everyone cutting benefits? Isn't that the way of the world right now? What's your answer to that?
Well, we're a federal contractor, and, you know, there's a certain responsibility that we have to meet certain Service Contract Act marks mm-hmm. when it comes to benefits. But we kind of take it above and beyond that, and I think that even if those weren't our requirements, that's kind of our company philosophy. We call them sleep-at-night benefits for our people.
What's an example?
Well, we pay for, the company pays for all health insurance benefits for our employee, vision for their family, dental for their family. The company pays for all that, the short-term disability, long-term disability, tuition reimbursement. The only component that we don't cover is a family buy-up for the health insurance, and that we work hard to keep that low.
Jennifer Stier and Jennifer Garrigan. Well, let me ask Jennifer Garrigan first. Why did George win this award?
It was tough competition for sure. We had a lot of very deserving people, but it was very clear along the process that George really did change the culture within Conserve from the time he arrived to the time he left. That he made some very key changes that helped employees from the person in the lowest position to the senior employees helped the quality of their career.
Now, the comments we've already had from some of the listeners before the show came in, some of the emails I got this morning about that notion of cutting benefits. Is that a stereotype? I mean, do you hear that, George, that in the work landscape today, a lot of companies are looking for ways to reduce cost? Sometimes that means taking an employee from 40 hours to 25 or whatever it is, and all of a sudden, you know, they're working part-time or not extending someone part-time to full-time, even though they're doing a lot of work for the company.
Well, Conserve, we work hard to make ourselves different. We're a differentiator, and we see that robust offering of benefits as something that makes us different in our industry. But I'm also a member of a couple of other smaller HR networking groups, and I have seen, after a presentation about the Affordable Care Act, for example, I was at a dinner table with four or five other business mm-hmm. owners and key executives, and they were trying to figure out, you know, I've got 54 people. I think I can get down to 48, and I've got 52 people. I think that with a little bit of a stretch, I can get to 47 or 46 so that I'm exempted from the Affordable Care Act, which was sad to hear. That's not the direction I don't think anybody wants to go in.
When you mentioned that number, is the number 50? Is that where's the threshold for the Affordable Care Act?
Correct. It's companies at 50 right now.
Okay. And obviously, for a company like yours, more than 600 employees across the two locations, not going to be in play, I should say, for you. But has the Affordable Care Act changed things for you?
Well, for us, it's a little different. We kind of fly above mm-hmm. virtually every threshold for that. Like I said, you know, we work hard, and benefits is a big differentiator for us. And so Conserve itself is probably not as impacted except for some of the back office and reporting needs. But for the basic coverage of our people, I think that there's distance between the regulatory requirements and where we sit. But for a lot of companies, that's not true, and especially for companies with very thin profit margins like restaurants and things like that. I've heard horror stories about how where they've had to react to this in a pretty bad way.
Yeah, and as the HR executive of the year for the area, I have to ask you, because now you're looked at as sort of a leader in the field, George, and that's kind of comes with it here. Every company is different, and I know you can really only speak for your own. But if you hear folks talking about trying to get from 54 employees to 48, et cetera, do you blame them, or is it a case of everyone's trying to get by and survive? What do you think of that?
I think that's just what it is. And, you know, the funny thing is that business owners, by and large, work hard to give their people a really great work environment. And I think well-meaning but unintended consequences of different regulations, I think sometimes puts a filter on that instead of enhances that. And it's too bad, but I think that's the world we live in.
We're talking about the many different aspects related to the HR Awards, and Rochester's National Human Resources Association chapter had their second annual awards last couple of weeks ago now, and George Heiler is the winner of the 2015 HR Executive of the Year. He's in the studio with us. Jennifer Garrigan and Jennifer Steyer are here, past president and president-elect. And let's look at some of the issues that are really on your radar, especially the need for skilled labor. Where? Who is kind of hiring? Where is the need for skilled labor that you're seeing it, Jennifer?
Sure. So we are always looking for skilled engineers, whether it's mechanical engineers or software engineers or control engineers. It's really been tough recruiting skilled engineers right now. We also have a hard time filling positions such as grinders and machinists. It's kind of a dying art right now. There's been some good programs started with MCC and FLCC, for example. Locally, NTID has a great machining program that we've gotten some great candidates from, but it's a dying art. So we're trying to figure out how can we get schools to make that more attractive.
Yeah, when you say dying art, you don't mean there's no need for it. You mean right now there's not enough candidates.
Correct. Not enough candidates.
Okay. Why did we go in that direction? Why did it become a dying art, do you think?
I think, and this is my own personal opinion, that schools push students to go to four-year colleges as opposed to it's okay to go to a BOCES program and go get a two-year associate's degree and learn how to machine pieces of metal or pieces of plastic. And then, you know, there was such a a push for that, people weren't going into that anymore.
It's a very interesting piggyback off what we talked about in the last hour. And for our listeners, I'd love to hear from you on this, especially on the topic that Jennifer just mentioned. When it comes to trying to assess a job market and what kind of schooling we think is right for us, are we moving back toward two-year trade schools, et cetera? Is there, do you see that more? I'd love to hear from our listeners on this, because we just talked about some of the pitfalls of four-year higher education. Certainly not every degree is a problem. It certainly, there are issues to be corrected on national and American higher education. But I'd love to hear from you about two-year and trade schools especially. When you hear Jennifer mention that there are openings, that there are opportunities, and right now they need more candidates. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also tweet at the program, at Evan Dawson, on Twitter. Okay, so any other areas of a need for skilled labor? Anything else stand out to you, Jennifer?
People that can have electrical and mechanical assembly skills, that they can read blueprints, those type of skills, that critical thinking, being able to read a blueprint and know how to wire a machine, that's been a tough skill to fill as well.
Okay. And again, do you think the cost of college is going to drive more interest in education in these fields? Are we on our way?
I hope so. It'd be nice.
Yeah. Well, I think it's almost inevitable. When you hear, we just had a New York University professor on, $70,000 a year at NYU.
Wow.
That's the first time I've heard 70. I hear a lot of private schools now in the 60s, NYU now at $70,000 a year. So maybe we will, and it looks like there are openings. What's the advice for people? Maybe you have someone in your family, maybe someone who's listening to the program now is thinking about careers like this. What are the steps you take, Jennifer, to end up with these skilled jobs that you're talking about? Especially if someone's saying, hey, I would love to restart a career, to think about this. How do you end up there?
Well, there's a lot of programs actually right now in Rochester and New York State to get grant money to be able to put yourself through school at a reduced cost, which is nice, especially people who've been laid off from a job and are looking to start a second career maybe later in life. You know, we've got great resources in the area like Rochester Works and Finger Lakes Works that can help people kind of explore and figure out what might be a good fit for them job-wise. You know, ask people, what do you do? What's it like? Mm-hmm. A lot of companies will be happy to do job shadows so you can see what a job looks like and understand more about what the requirements are, what that looks like, what it feels like, what's my day-to-day, how many hours, those sorts of things.
Is there at least a baseline of a requirement of retraining for some people? I mean, imagine you've been in a career for 20 years and there are layoffs or the career, really the industry that you're in has changed. I've heard from people who say, you know, I didn't go to school for this, or retraining seems difficult. But I guess that's part of what the landscape looks like now. What do you think?
I think maybe that's a bad stereotype, because there is definitely a lot of training and retraining resources out there. You just have to take a look and ask the question. Because people are more than willing to help you and show you and learn about different career opportunities. So I think that's probably a stereotype, at least in my experience.
Jennifer Garrigan, what do you think about the notion of kind of starting over, retraining, looking at new careers out there? What do you think?
I think it's become more common that people are willing to retrain and think it's never too late to go back to school and, like Jennifer said, take advantage of some of the resources that are out there and easily available. And I think that, you know, I work for a staffing agency, so I'm impartial, but I think if individuals are willing to start as temporary employees and prove themselves and get some on-the-job experience, I always think that can help them get to the next level. Sometimes it's scary to take something temporary, especially if you have a permanent role that you're leaving, but it might be worthwhile. Also, college students, you know, that are on their summers, you know, there's always the question, do I go back to the landscaping job that I mm-hmm. had that's easy, or the restaurant that I've been working in, or do I take a risk and try to find some office work to get some accounting or customer service experience?
Yeah, you mentioned taking a temporary job, what are some of the fields then where if you took that kind of work now, that maybe it leads to something more permanent?
Sure. You know, as far as the skilled labor that Jennifer's talking about, I'm not the expert in that field, but we focus on accounting, finance, payroll, HR, administrative, some more office type positions. And individuals can get any number of opportunities where you're maybe filling for a medical leave or starting. We have candidates all the time that start in an administrative role and they realize that, oh, this person, you know, has great Excel or a great personality. They might be good in sales or in accounting, and they either create a role or help them kind of get to the next level or know where to apply.
Okay. So, George, give us a sense for, again, call center. Tell us, again, for our listeners just joining us, George Heiler is the Vice President of Human Resources for Conserve. That's a company based in Fairport, but you also have a Cheektowaga location.
Right.
And roughly 600 employees, most of them in Fairport. And you do what?
We're adjudicators and debt counselors for mostly for the federal student loan project contract.
Okay.
But we have a lot of other clients and as well. And getting to that point, though, I think we would welcome a lot of people starting their second careers. We offer good benefits. Those are the people that I think that we would welcome in our environment. Somebody who benefits are important to them. Somebody who has a track record of stability in a previous position and finds themselves looking, especially through no fault of their own, you know.
So you have some employees in that situation. When you're hiring, how many resumes do you end up seeing typically?
Well, probably 10 to 1 probably for a successful
hire. 10 resumes for one job.
Yeah, yeah. And the resume is important. It's an ability to offer up a first impression, and I think we can tell if somebody's put some time into it and contoured it to our environment and done some research, and I think that's important. But basically, I think the real key is their ability to just come on board and be a positive person in our environment. I think I'm a big proponent of emotional intelligence, and I think that plays a big role in our work. You know, the ability to be poised and empathetic and
patient.
Self-aware. Yep.
Patient.
Okay. There you go.
Dwayne writes with a question on a couple of things. We've got some questions that have come in online. Let me hit those. Dwayne says, do resumes still matter anymore? So let's go around the table and try to answer that question. And you just mentioned getting resumes, but does the resume matter like it used to, George?
Well, I think that there's so many ways for people to communicate now. We do a lot of work in job fairs. We have a strong internet reach out capability, but I still think that it's a real opportunity for people to differentiate themselves. If you put a lot of time and effort and good work into a resume that represents you, you know, think about it. You're representing yourself to a company. Why wouldn't you do a quality job on that and really think about it and word it right, and maybe even do a little bit of research on the companies that you're sending it to contour it to those.
Do you see most resumes not tailored to your specific company?
I would say that the majority, I think people self-select out in our environment by not spending the time.
You can tell when someone hasn't spent the time.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, that's a great piece of advice right there. Okay, Jennifer Garrigan, do resumes matter?
In professional settings, absolutely. And I've heard a lot of people say that LinkedIn is the new resume, which is a good point. I agree with that in some ways. But a resume really is, it's a, you know, 1 to 2 page snapshot of why you think you're a match for the company or for the position. So as George said, spend some time on it. Make sure there's no spelling errors. We have clients all the time that one spelling error, you're out of consideration for the position, no matter what your experience is, because they think if you can't make sure there's no errors on one document, then how careful are you going to be once you get hired?
I think it's fair.
Right.
And I was going to ask what the biggest mistakes are, because George highlighted the fact that a lot of resumes are generic and not tailored to a specific position. Certainly, that was the old saw that I heard. My dad drilled that into me. If you make a grammatical, or if you have a typo on your resume, it's going to get thrown in the garbage. Sounds like that's still true. But Jennifer Garrigan, do you agree with George that resumes that are really tailored to a specific position matter? Do they stand out?
Yes and no. You know, working, like I said, at a staffing agency, mm-hmm. we work with such a wide variety. So for me personally, it doesn't necessarily have to be tailored. It just more has to show the direction that you want to go versus for a particular position. So, you know, for example, I'm looking for an entry-level accounting position, or I'm looking for an office assistant position to gain experience. But, you know, obviously putting the most relevant experience at the top and really making sure that it pops when someone's just glancing at your resume.
Do you see resumes that are too long?
Absolutely.
What's the longest resume you can remember?
I've had a 7 or 8 page.
7 or 8 pages?
Yes, unfortunately.
Wow. George, longest you can recall?
Yeah, that's up there. I mean, 5 or 6 is certainly, but that's a lot.
I mean, that's pretty remarkable. Jennifer Steyer, longest resume you can remember?
Yeah, probably. I think I had one time that was about 9 pages.
I don't mean to be laughing because whoever sent that is probably very proud of the work they've done, and I'm not diminishing it. But do you even get through 2 of the 9 pages?
No.
You
no.
instantly throw
you, Absolutely
you
not.
You see 9 pages and you go,
it's
no.
It's just like they say with the thumb rule. You know, if you're holding a sheet of paper, you want your most impactful to be at that top of that page. That's how you draw the person in.
Okay. So there's another obvious one. What else to you stands out? Do resumes matter to you?
Absolutely. Resumes yeah? absolutely still matter. I think they should be tailored to the type of position you're looking for. I don't think you necessarily have to fine-tune it specific. So if you're looking for a manufacturing engineering job, it should be geared towards a manufacturing engineering opening. But absolutely, no typos. Make sure your spacing makes sense. Make sure you're showing, you're showcasing yourself. So what results have you achieved? What have you done? What companies have you worked for? It should look good. It should look professional. And for skilled labor jobs, you know, machinists on up to professional level managers and VPs, it matters very much.
And Duane's follow-up is, do cover letters matter?
I would say that depends. Sometimes companies have automated recruitment systems where you upload your documents. Some people will upload both a resume and a cover letter. I guess my advice would be, if you're going to do a cover letter, make sure it is specific, make sure it is professional, and make sure it gives me more information that your resume doesn't. So maybe that's your opportunity to say why you're a fit for the particular company. But if you have typos in it and it doesn't make sense, or if you're doing a form letter and you forget to change one piece of it, it happens all the time.
Yeah. You've seen it?
Yes, all the time, unfortunately. So it tells you, well, I'm not really focused. I'm just cutting and pasting and applying for as many jobs as possible.
Right.
And that tells you a story as well.
Jennifer Garrigan, cover letters matter?
Like Jennifer said, I think it matters on the situation. So if there's a reason for it, you know, if your resume is pretty clear, I think, what you're looking for, and there's nothing that you want to address as far as objections, I wouldn't think that you should spend as much time on it. However, if, you know, for example, if you're looking to relocate and you want to explain, yes, I'm living in Philadelphia, but I'm relocating to Rochester, or if you're making a career change, maybe find a few ways to explain why you think you're a good fit for the new career, and maybe explain why your resume might not match that entirely.
George Heiler, cover letters matter to you?
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity to set the hook. I mean, think about it. You've got 100 resumes. You've got one that looks pretty good, and so now is the opportunity for you to, again, differentiate yourself, kind of set the hook, kind of point out the fact that maybe you have some common philosophical things to the company. It's an opportunity. Treat it like an opportunity.
Can you be too flippant, trying too hard?
Yeah, I think so. I think you want to be professional. I mean, you only get Jennifer said, you only get a few seconds to call out.
I know, and that's why I asked, George, because I remember when I was 22 and desperate for my first job. And I wanted the first line of my cover letter to get someone's attention, because I thought there's going to be 150 people applying for this one job. So I've got to do something to stand out. And I toned it down after a little while, and I finally found some work. but I understand the desire to stand out. So what you're saying is stand out, but be professional, I guess, yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Same?
Yes, I agree.
Have you seen some try to stand out too hard? Is there trying too hard?
There is, and there's also offering too much personal information. That happens, unfortunately, too regularly.
Personal information?
Yes. Personal life. I'm, married with 3 children and things like that that aren't necessary to get you a new position. And it can be a detriment sometimes.
Interesting. We're talking about HR, hiring, job trends, et cetera. And when I come back from the short break, we're going to get a couple of more of your questions on Twitter. David, a few others, we're going to get your questions in as we talk to Jennifer Garrigan, who is the National Human Resources Association president-elect for the local chapter. Jennifer Steyer is the past president, I should say. Jennifer Garrigan's also the placement director for AP Professionals. Jennifer Steyer's here. She's director of human resources for the Gleason Works and the past president of the local chapter. And George Heiler is the new winner, I should say, of their executive of the year, the HR executive of the year for the Rochester area. He was awarded that just a couple of weeks ago. They're all in studio answering our questions, and we'll get some more of your questions in after this short break on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. My colleague is Juan Vasquez. He's in studio. Are you in LinkedIn?
I'm on LinkedIn.
You are on LinkedIn.
I hate my picture, but I'm on LinkedIn.
You are on LinkedIn. I take it back. I think I'm on LinkedIn, and I haven't used it in a long time because I get a lot of LinkedIn requests, so I guess I'm probably still.
I was going to say, here come the ton of requests that everybody's going to be adding you on now.
Well, I just generally ignore that because I don't use it, but I guess in a minute I'm going to ask them if someone who has a long-term job, I hope it's long-term here at WXXI,
yes.
If they need to be on LinkedIn. So that's a good question. We're going to get to that in a second, but Juan's here for a different reason. There is no long-term WXXI without our members.
No, that's right. If our members are what makes it possible to be able to have this program and to talk about this type of topic, and it's a great topic too, and actually all the topics that Evan brings up on the show here. If you enjoy each and every day the myriad of topics and the different conversations that we have here on Connections, then think about becoming a member of WXXI and helping to support local public broadcasting and having us continue these conversations going into the future. And if you're listening, maybe not live, if you're listening to this on our podcast stream, which you can subscribe over at WXXINews.org, you can also become a member while you're doing that. If you're listening on a podcast stream, you can go to WXXI.org/listen, and you can make your pledge of support there, become a member of WXXI, and put in your vote for public broadcasting. And spelling is optional when you go to the website.
It is not optional on your resume.
It's not optional on your resume, but if you misspell something while you're becoming a member, we'll let it slide.
I remember coming over to WXXI about 16 months ago, Juan, and I hadn't updated a resume since college. And so it had been years. And I thought, oh my gosh, do I have to do this? Do you still have to do this? Do you keep an updated resume? I'm not asking you, like, are you leaving WXXI? I'm just curious. Do you keep an updated resume?
I haven't updated my resume in a while. Oh. But I will say this, because I have helped to hire folks here, mm-hmm. and we hired somebody that had a 9-page resume.
But we hired them?
We hired them.
Very interesting. Yes. That means you actually took the time to get through it.
Right.
Jennifer Steyer is here to tell us that she wouldn't even have gotten through that.
No, I would not have.
But, I will say this, and it might depend on the industry, too.
Yeah,
but
that's
here,
probably true.
They were talking about their work, and their work was impressive, and we hired them.
When we get out of this program, you're going to have to tell me who that is. But I would still tell them 9 pages is a lot. Anyway, thank you, Juan.
Thank you.
I hope you can join the membership, and we've only got about a day and a half left of the spring campaign. And I will be very honest with our listeners. We are a long, long way from our goal, and we really need you. So hopefully you can jump on WXXI.org/give. Let me get our first phone call for the hour. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255. This is Bernard in Fairport. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question. I had a 30-year career in the computer business, and there were two aspects of this conversation that I wanted to ask about. One is, it seems to me that human relations has taken on a much, much bigger role than it ever did in my career. As a matter of fact, I don't ever remember submitting my resume to human relations. I always submitted it to somebody who was either going to be my boss or had the actual job. That was number one. And number two, one of your speakers, if I understand it, is a contractor. And I also think you need to be a little bit careful when you're committing to a contractor, because my mentality is you've got a job until the contract goes away. Because the truth of the matter is you can go through a contract relationship and build up your career and so on and so forth, but when the contract goes away, the job goes away. So talk a little bit about the role of human relations in today, and, you know, the cautions that you need to take when you go to apply for a job. Thank you very much.
Bernard, thanks for the call. Let's start with the HR Executive of the Year in our area. George, go ahead.
Well, thanks. I think you might have thought about me when I said we're a federal contractor. The contracts go for years, and they're fairly stable, and we've had continuous employment growth since probably 1985 when we started. So it's not a matter of stability, at least in our environment. I guess I understand what he's saying about some other probably more finite or shorter contracts or for a different purpose, but that doesn't really apply to us.
Okay, well, how about his comments about human relations?
I think it's true. I think that HR, when I first started off a long time ago, HR was kind of an ancillary record-keeping function because of the legal changes, because of the just the huge amount of regulatory burden that's put on companies. We've had to kind of insert ourselves in the very beginning of the hiring process, and I think more and more of the hiring process has fallen to human resources.
Jennifer Garrigan?
I agree. You know, and part of the reason for creating the HR Executive of the Year Award was to recognize how key HR has become. And I think all of our executives that were finalists they have a seat at the strategic table for their company. So they're very involved in planning initiatives, and they're right there with the presidents and owners to make sure that the employees are considered. They're not an afterthought, and they can help the company grow. So HR has definitely taken on such a huge role over the past decade.
Jennifer Steyer?
Yeah, I agree with both George and Jennifer. People are your most expensive asset. So HR's role has expanded because of regulatory issues in the legal environment. And we're doing more than just payroll and benefits. We do a lot with employee relations and training and development and succession planning for the future. The role has just expanded and grown over the past probably 15 to 30 years.
A couple of different Davids with questions and some help for me on Twitter. One of the Davids says, Evan, don't worry, you only have 6 connections on an old LinkedIn account that claims you still work for Wham. So thank you, David. I guess that means I have to update that. So that means I do have an account, and it is not updated. Do I need to be? Should I still have a LinkedIn account?
You should.
Absolutely.
Yeah? Yes, everybody?
Yeah.
Does everybody in HR use it? Is that a absolute mandatory? I know I sound out of touch here, but yes to LinkedIn?
Yeah, it's a reference point to, I've just recently had to update mine. Mine was a little behind the times too, and I discovered that people were reaching out to me and using that, and I realized that, and I said, gee, I better have a pretty good vehicle for them to look at if they're insisting on using it. So, I would update it. And again, it's representing you, right?
It is. You're absolutely right, George. And if it says I work for someone I don't work for, I should absolutely change that. But how often do you use it, Jennifer?
Every day.
Every day?
Yeah, most of the, almost every hour of the day, I would say, during the 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. But also, I think it's great for National HR Association, an organization that I'm part of. It's great to have post meetings and discussions. There are a lot of different groups that you can join. So it's not just about what your profile is. It's about being part of a community and joining a group, getting involved in the discussions. It helps you stay up to date on relevant topics that are all professional versus some of the other social media avenues you can use.
Jennifer Steyer?
Yeah, I agree. It's not only used for recruitment purposes, but to stay connected to your own colleagues. So when you have professional questions, you can bounce ideas off each other. Or, like Jennifer said, be involved in a professional organization where you're talking about what are the hot things in benefits or payroll or succession planning, or how do you do performance appraisals. And so it's a nice online resource to connect with other professionals.
Well, we're talking about LinkedIn there, but Allie writes to the program and wants to know, has anyone on your panel ever Facebook or Google stalked a candidate and not hired them because of what they found? Jennifer Steyer?
I have not.
But do you, to use her term, Facebook or Google stalk?
I have never done that for any candidate. Done a Facebook to look them up and try to find information or, oh, but I guess I take that back. I have not on Facebook, but I have done Google searches.
Okay. Jennifer Garrigan?
I have. I don't know that I've ever not hired someone because of the results that I found, but we work with a lot of different industries. Marketing is one of them. So when we're interviewing someone for a marketing position, we need to know what their social media profile looks like and be prepared with that. So there are various reasons, but I don't think that there's been anything that's made us not hire someone. Maybe have a good chuckle, but other than that, it shouldn't affect it too much.
Jennifer, are they ever surprised that you've been searching through whatever social media they use?
I think if you're in marketing, you shouldn't be surprised by that. So I don't think it would shock anybody. It's public information, so anyone can do it. We have had candidates where we've said, you know, we did notice this, so you might want to consider how that looks to an employer. In general, I think people are appreciative when they hear things like that.
Sure, and given the field that you work in, maybe it's not a surprise that your candidates are aware of it, but what's some general advice for audience who may be applying for any job when it comes to their own profiles online?
Well, Google yourself and Google image yourself.
Google image yourself.
Yes.
Interesting.
I think people would be surprised what comes up from that. And some of it you can't do much about, but at least the awareness and knowing that it's there, in case it comes up, at least you're prepared and you're not surprised.
George, any Google or Facebook stalking that resulted in a termination or rescinding of an offer or anything like that?
No, just my sons. I do that once in a while for them. But no, the I know we've kind of concentrated on the professional side of the house with LinkedIn, and I'm sure we get information from LinkedIn, but I'm not aware that we've spent much time on Facebook.
Okay, a different David on Twitter asks a couple of different questions. Number one, Bob Duffy, the head of RBA now, the Rochester Business Alliance, recently called for RBA members to hire one person out of poverty. Is that realistic? And wants to know what our panel thinks about that. I'll start with you, George. Interesting.
Well, we're looking for 100 employees over the next 4 months. I would feel good that we're touching someone's lives in a positive way. We hope to touch all of them in a positive way. I'm not sure that we spend much time figuring out their individual circumstances, but I do think that, you know, that rising tide should float a lot of boats. I'm hoping some of them are coming from, and I imagine some are coming from more dire circumstances than others. I'm not sure how I feel about the rifle shooting a position, you know, for, it's, I don't want to call it a charitable event. It doesn't sound like he means it to go in that direction, but I'm not quite sure on that one.
Okay. Jennifer Garrigan?
You know, I agree with George in some ways. It's hard because we can't make hiring decisions based on someone's financial status, so I don't know how we would necessarily know. I know for AP professionals a few years ago, we did an AP Gives Back, and we surveyed our temporary employees to see, you know, is there anyone that needs help for the holidays. And some of the requests that we received back were surprising, and it was very rewarding to be able to help people, especially that are working hard for us on a daily basis. But some of them, we wouldn't have known their situations necessarily. So, you know, at EP, I think we would help anybody, no matter what their financial status is.
Jennifer Starr?
Yeah, same. I mean, you can't ask those type of questions to candidates. So, like we talked about earlier, present yourself well in paper and in your social media presence. And, you know, all three of us in the room have job openings at our company. So there's jobs out there.
Okay. Let me get back to the phones then. And this is Kevin in Rochester. Go ahead, Kevin.
I was wondering, you talked about resume lengths a little bit before. Can you tell me when is it appropriate to decide that I've got too much experience for a one-page resume? I need to go up to two.
It's a good question. So the question is, when is it appropriate and when is it okay to go with a two-page resume as opposed to one page? That's the question.
Correct. Yep.
Okay, Jennifer Steyer, go around the room. Go.
Sure. So I think if you're a recent grad, either from high school or college, and you have less than 5 years experience, you should be on the one page. And these are just rules mm-hmm. of thumb. But if you've got 10 plus years of experience, then two pages is absolutely acceptable.
Anybody disagree? Jennifer Garrigan?
No, I would agree. If you have the experience, put it on there. Just try to keep it concise as much as possible. I would say three is the absolute max, the number of pages that you should have. But if you're, because resumes are emailed mostly, sometimes people wouldn't even notice. I don't always print off the resumes to know exactly how many pages. But if you have the experience, I don't think two is as much of a deal breaker as it used to be.
Okay.
And be careful. Sorry to interrupt. Yep. If you've got 30 years experience, don't go back to your first job. We don't, keep your last 10 to 15 years on your resume. That's plenty.
Mm-hmm. Okay. George?
Yeah, I would concur with all that.
Okay. You ever find people stretching two pages, but it could easily be one, and it seems sort of superfluous and stretched? Do you ever see that, George?
Yeah, I suppose I have, but I think more important, if it's not outside a stark parameter like 4 or 5 pages, I think that we really don't have time to say, oh, is it a one? Is it a two?
Okay.
You're just looking for the information.
Okay.
Right. The germane information so we can move forward.
All right, Kevin. Well, hopefully that answers your question because, again, I think I grew up thinking that of a one-page and one-page-only resume. I think that was sort of the model that I was told to stick to. And sounds like if you're 2 pages, you're fine, especially if it's relevant experience. But good advice really from Jennifer Steyer. I hadn't thought about that. Don't feel like you have to go all the way back to the beginning.
Well, it tells your employer or your potential employer how old you are. And sometimes you want to keep that to yourself until you get yourself in person.
Okay.
And you can prove yourself.
Colleen writes to the program about online resumes. She writes the following. Why do more and more companies require that you upload a resume and cover letter and then enter all of the same information into a buggy web interface? If I've already spent an hour or two tailoring my resume, I get frustrated when it takes me another hour or two wrestling with a normalizing data entry interface that often errors out and kicks me out of the application process. Are you just trying to vet out those that get too frustrated with this ridiculous process? Which do you actually look at? Jennifer Steyer?
Well, we have an online application process, and ours is quite lengthy. So I understand. I was in that boat as well when I applied for my job. But it's an online application. So that's the legal document that you're putting your information out there about what your jobs are, what the dates of employment were, who you worked for, what your job responsibilities were. A lot of companies are doing that online application now as opposed to you coming in and filling out an application by hand. And then you have an opportunity to upload your resume in the format that you want us to see it as. So it's a little bit different. It might be the same for some people, but it's actually two different things. And yes, we look at both.
Jennifer Garrigan.
I think I agree with Jennifer. It's for HR departments that, as we mentioned, are so overworked and have such a huge variety and responsibility. I think a lot of companies are switching to that to save time, because then it's not someone internally that's entering the information for every applicant. The applicant is entering the information themselves. So it is a time saver, especially for positions where you get hundreds of resumes. It's nice to have it already done. And again, I think you just have to be patient, as Jen said. It's the application process, so you'd have to be doing it at one point anyway. So it's just whether you're doing it both at once or at two different times.
George?
Yeah, I agree. The electronic version is searchable. It's it allows easier access to the parsing it out for various uses in our house. I think that's the way to go.
A follow-up question from one of the many Daves online. David writes, what are the challenges to hiring people with presumably limited skills? It's a general question. Jennifer Steyer, how do we answer that?
Can you repeat it again?
He says, what are the challenges to hiring people with presumably limited skills? Is it simply a matter of training? And George, what do you think?
Well, you know, there's a lot of positions that we would have that it's more what you bring to the table in terms of capability than it is history. I mean, we not being an electrical engineer or a trained manufacturing welder isn't much of a barrier in our world. So I would think that would be all right. You know, you have somebody who successfully completes the hiring process, presents themselves well. I think we focus a lot on emotional intelligence as well. So if you present yourself well, communicate well, I think this lack of skills, I think we'd have to figure out what that is. If it's communication skills, it would be a problem. If it's technical skills, not so much.
All right, I think I understand his question a little better. And that's, I think that's a very fair answer, by the way, George. But I think I understand his question a little better reading it again, because he was one who asked earlier about Bob Duffy's call for RBA members to hire one person out of poverty. And then he's asking, are there challenges to hiring people with presumably limited skills? I think the question essentially is that are there sort of barriers to entry for people in poverty because of either lack of educational opportunities or other things that might make it likely that they're going to face trouble getting any job or getting into companies like the ones we're talking about today? George?
Well, I think we have to separate economics from education and capability. I mean, I think we were all starting off. We were all at a point where we didn't have a lot of monetary resources. I know certainly that is the case for me. And before ramen noodles, I was to, you know, Campbell's soup, right? So, but there was a point in time in which I applied, got a job, worked hard, brought what talents I could and learned, and you know, that's how you build a life.
So you're interested in capabilities, not the person's background.
Right.
Okay. Would you hire someone who doesn't have the same capabilities as some of the other candidates if they came from a rougher background to try to pull them forward a little bit and give them a little more time to train and get up to speed?
If they met our qualifications and said, look, you know, they have basic keyboarding skills. They can hear information mm-hmm. and distill it and report it in a system. If they can do the things that we ask them to do, I don't really care where they come from.
Okay. Anybody disagree? I think agreement around the table there on that. And Andrew writes to the program. He writes, cutting benefits is bad business, and of course my company has cut benefits. Just want to know what your panel thinks about the business of cutting benefits. George, let's go around the table, and I'll start with the HR Executive of the Year. That's George. What do you think about that? And by the way, your company hasn't cut benefits, I should say. Andrew says his company has, but he says it's bad business. What do you think?
Well, it's tough. If the difference is, you know, having to lay off people or adding more copay dollars, and that would be a tough decision. And I have faced that in other companies. I'm grateful that I haven't in this one. We work hard to make sure that our benefits are valuable and economically viable. It's not easy these days. I must say, there's a lot of companies that are really that are really hurting. And I think that is the pointy part of this argument. And perhaps it is bad business. Laying off people is bad business. I think it's you got to pick your poison in some of these things.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer?
I agree with George on that point. I think a lot of companies, it comes down to whether they have to reduce the amount of employees they have or if they have to cut their overhead costs to stay afloat and to not have to send jobs overseas or outsource certain departments in general. So I think companies sometimes get a bad rap when they do things like this, even though maybe in the long run they're looking out for the best interest of all their employees and not just a certain group.
Well, let me hit one more listener question, and we only got about 2 minutes left. Lindsay in Irondequoit writes, I'm wondering how someone sharing too much personal information could work against them without that violating their civil and constitutional rights. I feel there's a lot of unspoken discrimination going on in HR in major companies when it comes to choosing a candidate that has children or family versus one that does not. Jennifer.
Well, we're not allowed, people aren't allowed to ask those questions on interviews. So unless you disclose that information, you're hiring manager or the person you're interviewing with is not going to have that information. The types of questions they can ask, can you start on time? Are you available X hours? But we can't ask about your personal situation, and people you're interviewing with shouldn't be asking those questions.
She seems to think that some companies do, but what you're saying is they should not be.
They should not be. Those are illegal.
And if you're applying for a job, you should not tolerate that, right?
Correct.
Is that fair?
Correct.
Jennifer?
Right. And okay. I think you don't have to offer it up either. You know, there's always going to be someone who has a prejudice or something in the back of their mind that you don't know, and they shouldn't be using that to discriminate when hiring. So the more you don't offer it up and, you know, put it on your cover letter, it opens yourself up to people who are against the norm, who might not be doing things the right way. So keep it to the professional, the needed information.
A lot of great stuff this hour. Once again, our congratulations to George Heiler, the Vice President of Human Resources for ConServe and winner of the 2015 HR Executive of the Year for the Rochester area for the National Human Resource Association. Thank you for being here, George.
My pleasure.
Jennifer Steyer and Jennifer Garrigan are both past president and the president-elect of the NHRA in the local chapter. And real briefly, Jennifer Garrigan is president-elect. Where would you send people online to learn more about what you and the organization do?
Humanresources.org.
Humanresources.org. Right. Find more information there. Thanks again for taking the time to come in.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. And thanks for all the great questions, both on the phones and online today. A lot of great interaction, and hope we've covered a lot of ground for you. I'm Evan Dawson. Great job, Val LaBanca, engineering the program. And thank you for listening to member-supported public radio.